It is time for Gaza Corner. This is a segment we do every Saturday night around 11 o'clock. And tonight, even though sometimes it's all could be about anywhere in the Middle East or even beyond sometimes, tonight it is on Gaza. And then we'll play music from Gazan children. I don't know about you, but when I am at my computer especially, and there's even a 1 second blackout that I like lose my content on my computer, doesn't save it because it was a quick blackout, I get really annoyed, really pissed. And if there's a blackout for like multiple hours, it's like everyone goes crazy. It creates complete havoc. And then imagine, okay, we're in Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv is cosmopolitan. It's very hip like San Francisco. It's, you know, bright lights, big city. An hour from Tel Aviv, let's say you want to drive an hour away and go to Gaza. Of course, you can't. You can't get there. I mean, they won't let you in. It's closed. It's sealed off from virtually anybody and sealed off from the world. But I can tell you that life in Gaza is worse now than it's ever been. Worse than you can even imagine. Okay, we get annoyed by blackouts. In Gaza, it's like medieval times. Electricity hardly exists in Gaza. Kids study by candlelight. Do we have that photo on the playlist, Harry? There's a photo on the playlist with the links to the source material for tonight's Gaza Corner. And one of the photos are a brother and a sister studying by candlelight in Gaza. Gazans do their dishes by candlelight. It wasn't always this way. Gaza's electricity crisis began in 2006 when the sole power plant in Gaza was hit by an Israeli airstrike. The plant could only work with minimal capacity after that, so Gazans were forced to rely on electricity sent from Israel and Egypt, which didn't nearly make up for the electricity they had. And if you are a Gazan born since 2006, if you can imagine being a Gazan child born since 2006, you would only know life under siege and power cuts. And that would become routine. It would be your normal way of life. Mohammed Yassin is such a boy. He's in that photo I was telling you about on the Tangents playlist at tangents.com, far left-hand column, KALW playlist. He was born in Gaza in 2006, just a little after that airstrike that mostly destroyed the power plant in Gaza. 2006 was the year Hamas won the Palestinian legislative election. Mohammed is used to living in darkness. Quote, Mohammed Yassin, "I don't remember a day without power cuts." He told this to the Middle East Eye, which is a news outlet. He was speaking as his mother lit a candle for him and his sister. Mohammed, quote, "I'm getting better at lighting the candles and sticking them on plates with my mother's help," adding that he does very well in school despite the power cuts. Ahmed Abu Salama lost the freedom to move around in his own home. There isn't freedom to move outside of Gaza. It's the densest populated enclave on earth, 2 million people in a very small area. But he lost his freedom to move around his home because he could no longer charge his electric wheelchair, which was given to him by a local charity. He says, quote, "When my wife isn't at home and the electricity goes off, I stay in bed for hours because I can't reach the lights. And when I try to, I fall on the ground, unquote. Abu Salama and his friends were hit by an Israeli airstrike while they were walking home from school in the Jabalia refugee camp in February of 2008. Abu Salama, who was 16 at the time, was the only survivor. He sustained severe skull fractures and was partially paralyzed in his right hand and leg. And when he could not get the treatment that he needed in the impoverished Gaza Strip, his health deteriorated, and now he cannot walk at all. The preceding stories come from a Middle East Eye article that's linked at the playlist. It's called Blackouts in Bedlam, Gazans Left in the Dark About Their Future. Gazans needlessly die every single day because hospitals cannot function without electricity. Water becomes contaminated without electricity. Food goes rotten, and medicine cannot be refrigerated without electricity. Sewage pumps become incapacitated, and untreated sewage does not just harm Gazan residents, but the sewage can reach Israel, like Ashkelon can receive sewage because of this. Gaza is nearing a boiling point. This latest spark of cuts in electricity occurred when Israel partnered with the Palestinian Authority, led by Mahmoud Abbas, to ratchet up the misery index in Gaza by reducing Gaza's 4 hours of electricity. Four hours a day is now down to three. Who can live this way? Who? Israeli writer and historian Ilan Pape calls this, quote, incremental genocide. When a population of 2 million people are locked inside the most populated, densest populated enclave on Earth and receives so little electricity in what is now an intolerable heat in the summer in Gaza, it's easy to imagine protests boiling over into violence and worse. Gideon Levy, in a column in Haaretz on June 15th, which is called Who's in Favor of a Massacre in Gaza, says, quote, what other way does Gaza have to remind the world of its existence and inhuman distress except the Qassam rocket? One more hour in Gaza without electricity, and the signal there will be given, Qassam rockets. Israel once again will be the victim, and the massacre will begin. Continuing the words of Gideon Levy, a war won't be conducted in Gaza because there's nobody in Gaza to fight against one of the most heavily armed militaries in the world. There will be no morality or justice in Gaza because there is no morality or justice in attacking a shuttered cage full of inmates who don't even have where to run if they could. So let's call a spade a spade. This is what's known as a massacre. That's what they're talking about in Israel now. Who's for a massacre and who's against it? Any attack on Gaza will end up in a massacre. There's nothing to justify it because a massacre cannot be justified. The words of Gideon Levy, unquote. Gazan resident Haider Eid, E-I-D, wrote an opinion piece in Middle East Eye. It's called One Question Left in Gaza, Death by Massacre or Lack of Electricity. The subheadline reads, with intensified electricity cuts, its biggest aid donor under pressure, speaking of Qatar, and many saying another Israeli offensive is imminent, the siege in Gaza has never been worse. His words, it may sound very benign, electricity has been cut to Gaza, but it is a death sentence for the almost 2 million Gazans like me living in the Israeli-imposed blockaded strip. In fact, cutting electricity to Gaza is a de facto declaration of war against the civilian population and an illegal form of collective punishment. Continuing the words of Gazan resident Haidar Eid, the debate amongst Gazans nowadays is whether a direct military assault, that is, the use of bombs and guns carried out by apartheid Israel, is a better way to die than through an incremental genocide, the intensifying blockade that has been imposed on our tiny strip for 10 years. Just think about that. Are there citizens in any other country in the world who debate what the better way is for them to die? Unquote, Gazan resident Haidar Eid. The siege recently became worse because Mahmoud Abbas, the president of the Palestinian Authority, who was elected to a 4-year term in 2005, yet he still remains in power, asked Israel to cut the electricity, supply to the Gaza Strip to exert pressure on Hamas. Some in the Israeli military pointed out, not from a humanitarian point of view, but just from an economic standpoint, that Israel would be better off paying Gaza's electricity bills than being dragged into a war. We're talking tens of millions of shekels a month for electricity. A shekel is, well, $1 is like 3.5 shekels. That amount is much lower than the economic cost of a single day of dropping bombs on Gaza. At a security cabinet session, the Israeli ministers decided that Israel would go along with Mahmoud Abbas and the PA's electricity cuts in Gaza down to 3 hours a day. What does this mean? In practical terms, it means that hospitals, including Al-Shifa in Gaza City, have stopped doing operations even in urgent cases. 90% of the water supply is now undrinkable, which increases the risk of disease spread by dirty water. You may recall in 2015, the UN warned that Gaza could be uninhabitable by 2020, and the situation has only gotten worse since then. Haidar Eid describes what slow motion or incremental genocide looks like. Quote, the terror of it is that Gazans die every day, but death from illness as a result of dirty water or the lack of a life-saving operation, starvation due to the crops that fail to grow without sufficient irrigation, or babies dying because they cannot be kept warm in their first few days of life. Gazan deaths do not make the news headlines because they have been a daily routine for a decade. Only Israel benefits from this silence, and only Gazans pay for the price of this silence. Unquote. Take Mohammed Salam, who is one of 700 patients in Gaza who suffer from renal failure. In this Middle East Eye article that's linked at the playlist, it describes him as a 45-year-old who has to go to the hospital 3 times a week to receive dialysis. Last week, he went to Al-Shifa Hospital only for doctors to tell him that his treatment would be irregular due to more than 20 hours of power cuts every day. Quote, I don't know why all sides punish us this way, said Salam, whose two children have cancer. Gazans have an unusually high incidence of cancer, likely due to the effects of the Israeli weaponry, much of it banned under international law, it's almost as if they experiment on the Gazan population to see how the weapons will perform. They use them almost like guinea pigs. Israel used these weapons during the massacres in 2012, 2009, and 2014. Because of the blockade, Gazans don't have equipment to provide the kind of cancer treatment known to the rest of the world. Basic and special medicines are in scarce supply because of the blockade, which I'll remind you is now 10 years, which is the longest blockade in the history of humankind. And the world looks on in indifference. Meanwhile, Gazans keep posing the question, which is more pressing, a summer without electricity and water or an Israeli war? The source material for this Gaza Corner can be found at the Tangents playlist for tonight at tangents.com. You can click on the KALW playlist. It took about 3 years to make, but there is a CD called Salute to Gaza. It's the Gaza Youth Choir. It was produced by a couple of very determined and intrepid folks from Norway who run the record label KKV, KKV.no, produced by Erica Hillestad. He said, It could have been done in months, but it took 3 years because of the difficulty of just recording an album in Gaza or having access to the children. I want to play a couple of tracks, one that's orchestral and one that's a classic traditional song. And this is Salute to Gaza, the Gaza Youth Choir on Gaza Corner on 91.7.
Thank you.
The Gaza Youth Choir during Gaza Corner on 91.7 as we continue on Tangents.
حين يصد وحوش الحروب شيئا.